Welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is where we highlight the groundbreaking work that's being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. It's part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. And joining me this week, Dr. Divya Gupta, board-certified neurologist and sleep specialist and medical director of the Hackensack Meridian Health JFK Neuroscience Sleep Lab. Good morning, doctor.
Hello, Joel. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you for joining me this week. We want to talk about some of the new, there are new devices for treatment for sleep disorders today. So we're going to cover that completely. But I wanted to, just before we start, everyone knows about, I guess, like CPAP. Are there others that are also the more popular ones right now before we get into the newer ones?
Yes, Joel. I think it's an exciting time in the field of sleep medicine. So researchers are coming out with new methods of treatment of common sleep disorders that are now FDA approved and are available for use in the general population. So one of the commonest sleep disorders that we see in our sleep clinic is snoring and daytime sleepiness, or what is commonly called as obstructive sleep apnea.
Right.
And as you know, people have been traditionally using, wearing a mask, which is connected to a machine that blows air under pressure into the throat to support it from collapsing during sleep, which is the CPAP machine. Mm-hmm. But there are issues with CPAP, you know, getting a comfortable mask, sometimes dryness of the nose and the mouth, sometimes air swallowing, and so on. So a lot of people find that, try as they might, they are struggling with using CPAP and are looking for alternatives. So the good news is that for obstructive sleep apnea, now there is a new device available which works differently. It does not require the use of a mask or use of a breathing machine, but in fact, it is a nerve stimulator that stimulates the nerve to the tongue muscles. And that is the way it works.
It stimulates the tongue?
Yeah. So in certain patients who have tried CPAP and are having difficulty tolerating it, this may be a viable treatment alternative.
Mm-hmm.
So the device does require surgical implantation. And once it senses that the person's chest is expanding to breathe in, it has wires connected to the nerve that moves the tongue forward, and it moves the tongue forward at the same time as a person is attempting to breathe in. So it tries to open up the airway at the times that a breath is being taken in, and that is how it improves obstructive sleep apnea.
So it knows when it's needed. So is this a major surgery. Is it significant in any way?
So it is a same-day surgery. It is performed by ENT surgeons who are trained in implanting this device. And it is a small disc-like device that is implanted under the skin of the chest wall. And it has a wire that is towards the lungs as a sensing lead, and another wire that is towards the nerve that supplies the tongue muscle as the activation lead for moving the tongue forward.
That's unbelievable. Like they can attach something to a nerve that strictly is connected to the tongue muscle.
There you go. And there's a remote control kind of device that they give the patient. So the patient can turn their implanted stimulator on when they're ready to go to sleep. And then in the morning, the patient wakes up and turns it off. So it just feels like gentle movements of the tongue forward.
Mm-hmm.
When the device comes on, and as patients get used to it, they're able to sleep pretty comfortably with the device on.
So you can feel it working?
So you do sense it working, and mm-hmm. part of the settings of the device have to do with making sure that there is adequate juice or stimulation on the device to move the tongue forward.
Wow. How did they come up with this?
I think necessity is a mother of invention. So how many people are struggling with CPAP, I think this is a nice new alternative for a certain subset of those people. It's not for everybody. There has to be a certain pattern of the airway closure during sleep that is favorable for benefit from this device. So if the patient's airway is closing in a front-to-back or a slit-like manner, then those patients typically benefit from this device. However, if the airway is collapsing all around or in a circular manner during sleep, then those patients may not be good candidates for this device.
So it's not for everybody, but if it is, it works well.
Correct. And so the first step of evaluation is to actually do a procedure under sedation, which is a scope the throat during sedation and see which way the airway is collapsing during sleep. So that is called a drug-induced sleep endoscopy or a DISE or DICE procedure.
Okay.
And those patients who are identified as good candidates with this procedure then go on to have the implantation done as a step two or a separate procedure.
And once someone has, I don't know how long this has been being used, but once someone has the implant and they start using it after time, does it work for, is it a 100%, is it 99%, or is it?
That's a great question. Yeah, so it has been around for almost 10 years now, so it has
okay.
a good track record. Almost 80% of the patients who use it, they do feel an improvement in their sleep. And about 30% of the patients who use it have normalization of their sleep apnea scores or their sleep apnea scores improve significantly.
And now you mentioned, I pretty much probably know the answer to this, but you mentioned when you wake up, you turn it off. What if you don't turn it off?
So it does, the newer generations of this device do have automatic shut off as well.
Okay.
So if you forget to shut it off, it will time itself off eventually.
Because you're awake and it knows you're awake because your tongue's moving around?
No, it has a timer in it. So you can preset that. So suppose you usually wake up at 7 a.m., but for some reason you woke up at 6 a.m. and were rushing to get ready, forgot to turn it off. It will time itself out at 7 a.m.
Okay. And there's batteries? There's no charging this, is there?
Correct. So it is operated by a battery, which is contained within the device. And the newer generations have a long battery life, so the battery does not need to be replaced that often.
Okay.
And when it does, it can be done without having to replace the leads. They don't have to pull out the entire device to replace the batteries. It can be done the equipment is still there.
Yeah, this is amazing because not just, I mean, anybody who deals with someone who snores or has sleep apnea, who is dealing with it, then their partner is dealing with it as well. So this is...
That's so true.
Great for everybody. A lot of people sleep in separate rooms because of it. Now this would prevent that from being necessary.
Well, it does improve snoring to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
However, a lot of the disturbance of the bed partner is from snoring, so that may or may not be entirely eliminated.
Okay.
But definitely, it is more comfortable for the patient to use,
mm-hmm.
Especially if patients who are frequent travelers for business. It's much more easy to take with you, basically. And so this is something that is now available for patients with moderate to severe sleep apnea who are having trouble tolerating their CPAP machine.
I was just thinking of the noise of the CPAP. Not just the snoring, but that machine, right?
That's true. Yeah, I mean, the CPAP machines that are newer are much quieter than the older ones. And, it makes a humming sound, but it's nowhere near as loud as snoring if the patients were not using the CPAP machine. So I wouldn't rule out CPAP altogether. But I think for those patients who have tried CPAP and are having difficulty with it, they can certainly explore this option with their sleep physician.
Okay. Now the device that we were just talking about, was that specifically the hypoglossal neurostimulator?
That is correct.
Okay,
that
so there's another one.
Right. So turning the page, not all sleep apnea is the same, right? So we talked about the one that has snoring at night and daytime sleepiness is obstructive sleep apnea because the airway is collapsing during sleep and creating that, floppy airway or snoring sound. However, there is another type of sleep apnea which has silent apnea. So there is no snoring, but there is sleep disruption at night and daytime sleepiness all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why these apneas are silent are because these are pauses in breathing. There is no breathing. There is a pause in breathing or the central drive to breathe is paused from the brain. So these are so-called central sleep apneas. And these can get missed. Because even the bed partner, unless, they're vigilant, may not notice that the patient is having some disturbed breathing in sleep. So these can slip through easily, but they can cause a lot of sleep disturbance and quality of life issues for the patient. So typically central sleep apneas tend to occur more in patients who have a slow circulation time from the heart to the brain, or patients with congestive heart failure or history of atrial fibrillation who mm-hmm. are on, you know, medications to slow down their heart rate. Mm-hmm. So those patients are particularly at higher risk. And once they go through a sleep evaluation and they're diagnosed with, sleep apnea, which is predominantly central in nature rather than obstructive in nature, then believe it or not, there is nerve stimulators for them too now. So, traditionally these patients also received, therapy with machines that were smart machines. So those machines blew air in the throat. They still had to wear a mask and had to be connected to a machine that was blowing air into their throat. But the smart machines were also blowing breaths for the patient when their own breathing was paused. So that is how those breathing machines, are correcting central sleep apnea. But again, same issues. Not all patients are able to tolerate the breathing machine treatment. Okay. And sometimes the breathing machine treatment is not completely effective in improving their central sleep apnea pattern. And in fact, patients who have a very weak heart, they may not even be candidates for certain types of smart breathing machines. So then what are they left to do? So this new nerve stimulator, which actually stimulates the nerve to the diaphragm, or the phrenic nerve stimulator, is a very reasonable option for those patients.
The phrenic nerve stimulator.
There you go. So the phrenic nerve stimulates the diaphragm, which is the kind of, canopy of muscle that separates the chest cavity from the abdomen. Mm-hmm. And you might be aware of it when you hiccup. You know, that is the muscle that's contracting when you're hiccup.
Okay.
So this phrenic nerve stimulator, again, it can be placed transvenously. The leads can be placed transvenously by an electrophysiology cardiologist in a cardiac cath suite. And the disc of the device is implanted under the skin of the chest wall, much the same like a pacemaker. And basically, it turns on by itself and the patient lies down at night, and it senses when the patient's breathing is starting to go through cyclical pausing and breathing, and it takes over and starts spacing the diaphragm to breathe in a way that's normal, uniform breathing. And it helps the patient to sleep much better and feel a lot better the next day.
Okay, we just have a couple minutes left. I wanted to touch on, there's a device that treats restless leg syndrome as well?
Correct. So now for patients who are on medical therapy for restless legs and they're not responding to it, like they've tried a medication or several medications or escalating mm-hmm. the dose and the restless legs is not helpful, it's not improving. So there is now a nerve stimulator for the leg muscles. So these are battery chargeable bands. It's a pair of bands that you wear under the knees. You can wear it at bedtime. You can wear it for long car rides. You can wear it for a theater show. You can wear it during a flight. And basically, it stimulates the nerve on the side of the knee that goes down into the side of the calf, and it helps to stimulate the calf muscle in a way that it calms down the restless feelings. So almost 60% of the patients noted benefit after 2 months of regular use. So again, a great treatment alternative for patients who are running into trouble with their restless leg medication.
That's good. So are these devices we've talked about today, are they covered by insurance?
Correct. So the sleep physician has to submit the clinical information to the patient's insurance, and in the appropriate circumstances, these devices would be covered by the patient's
right,
insurance.
Right, okay. Not all insurance, but some. You'd have to just check which one you have, obviously.
Well, I know that the tonic, Medicare covers all of these devices in the appropriate clinical setting. Let's put it that.
Okay. All right, great. Doctor, thank you so much. Dr. Divya Gupta, board-certified neurologist and sleep specialist and medical director of the Hackensack Meridian Health JFK Neuroscience Sleep Lab. Thank you for taking the time and sharing the news.
Thank you. Thank you, Joel. Thank you for inviting me.
It is JFK Spotlight on Health. We're highlighting the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison, part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. And our second guest today, we're keeping the theme. Dr. Stacy El-Khatib-Smith is a pediatric sleep neurology physician at JFK University Medical Center. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I just spoke with Dr. Gupta, and we talked about these new devices for treatment for sleep disorders. And that was, we talked about the adults, in adults. So is this, all the things that we talked about, and one of them being the hypoglossal neurostimulator, can that be used for children?
There is one group of children that it's been approved in, and that would be children with Down syndrome who are at least 13 years old, and they have to have severe obstructive sleep apnea, not be able to tolerate CPAP, and also their sleep apnea has to not have been cured by removing their adenoids and tonsils.
Okay, so is that common when you, I mean, how... Are there a lot of children who fall under that list of things that they need to qualify?
Yeah, so it's not most children who have Down syndrome, who have obstructive sleep apnea, do not end up, using this hypoglossal nerve stimulator, but it's really in those children that have difficulty with other treatments. I will say, obstructive sleep apnea in children, just children in general, the prevalence is about 1 to 5%, whereas in children with Down syndrome, that prevalence jumps up to 53 to 76%. So a huge difference. And children with Down syndrome just have some anatomical differences, like they have lower muscle tone, their airway might be more narrow, their facial structure is a little different, and all of these things can make obstructive sleep apnea more common in these children. And so, usually the first line is to remove the adenoids and tonsils if it's indicated, just like, what we generally do in children. And then if children still have obstructive sleep apnea that's significant enough, we'll try to do CPAP. But then there is this smaller portion of children where they're just not able to tolerate CPAP, and then having this hypoglossal nerve stimulator in teenagers with Down syndrome provides this additional option to treat them, which I think is great.
And for the things that you mentioned, the differences that children have with Down syndrome, the short list that you just gave, that is the reason it's only approved for children with Down syndrome?
I think that's why the company started, in children with Down syndrome, just because there was this bigger need because the prevalence is so much higher. And so, I think they started there, and I'm not sure what groups they're studying next, but, who knows who it'll be approved in the future.
Okay. So for now, it's only for Down syndrome. And also, we don't know if a child who doesn't have Down syndrome used this stimulator, what the effects would be. Right. So all right. So what about we also talked about with Dr. Gupta, the phrenic nerve stimulator.
That is only for adults.
Okay. That's only adults. Okay. And I know that, what about the, there was a, for restless leg syndrome.
For the restless leg, also only for adults thus far. But, I do think, especially with that the stimulator for the restless legs, I really think, there could be a future using it, in say adolescents or in children potentially, but that just hasn't been studied yet.
Okay. So we'll get there one day. So what are some of the, in children, what are some of the, I guess, what's the first step? Because they're not going to come to you when they come to you, and if they're diagnosed with a sleep disorder of some sort, you're not going to jump right to the neurostimulator. Right?
No. So first we have to diagnose a child with obstructive sleep apnea. And as you mentioned, they'll present to clinic. They might have, say, snoring, or their family notices pauses in breathing, or they're having really restless sleep, or, you know, there are all these different things. Maybe they're grinding their teeth a lot, you know, all these different symptoms where we say, you know, do they have obstructive sleep apnea? And then I will order an overnight sleep study, which we do at JFK. So it's an in-lab sleep study. The child just stays the night with a, you know, with an adult. And there we're able to see how they're breathing at night. And we can also look if their oxygen dropping from possible, you know, from obstructive sleep apnea, if their body holding on to carbon dioxide, you know, how are they breathing at night? And if a child is diagnosed with obstructive sleep apnea, the first line treatment is often removal of the adenoids and tonsils if they're causing an issue. And that's more in the younger children because that's when the tonsils and adenoids grow. And so, you know, we usually start there, have, you know, work with ear, nose, and throat surgeons to help figure that out. And then if it's very mild, you know, sometimes we use medicine instead of surgery. And there's also the option of VPAP. And then as far as teenagers, for them, it may be that their tonsils and adenoids are not big anymore, that they've decreased in size as they've gotten older. So, you know, it's more likely we'd be using CPAP in the teenagers.
Now, we've spoken before. I don't know if I've ever asked you this before. I know that tonsils are, they don't do anything. So removing them, most people have them removed because they cause an issue and then they're removed. What about the adenoids? Are they in the same kind of, have the same MO?
Yeah, so the tonsils and the adenoids, they do help with sort of protection and with the immune system, though. You know, there have been a lot of studies trying to figure out, you know, is there sort of negative effects with removing them? And overall, it seems like there aren't. So it's okay.
Okay, no, but I thought the tonsils were like the appendix. They don't do anything. But you're saying they actually do something, but there are instances.
Yeah, they also, you know, if a child's getting, you know, frequent strep infections and, you know, all these other things, then you weigh, you know, pros and cons, and it's better for them to be removed, or if they're, you know, having obstructive sleep apnea and pauses at night, you know, all of these things. And so, you know, they can sometimes cause a lot of trouble, and doing surgery then often helps.
Okay, now but the adenoids, I guess what I'm trying to find out,
they're just similar.
Okay, that's what I was trying to figure out. Is it similar to the tonsils? Yeah. You don't need them, but they kind of do something, but they could cause trouble.
Yeah, you need them, but it's not terrible if you have to remove them if they're causing more issues, and it's okay. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, doctor. Thank you, doctor. We learned a lot about these stimulators that are now really making a difference, and as I spoke with Dr. Gupta as well, getting rid of those CPAPs is really an awesome thing for many people.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely provides another option for patients who just can't tolerate the CPAP.
Dr. Stacy El-Khatib-Smith, thank you so much for joining us, pediatric sleep neurology physician at JFK University Medical Center. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
If you'd like more information, you can go to jfkmc.org. Now, if you'd like a podcast of the show, you can go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com or magic983.com. JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. Next week, we'll talk again. I'm Joel Katz.